Welcome to the Gifters Podcast. I'm your host, Christopher Kai. This podcast is sponsored by the GPS Online Program, which teaches you how to turn your story into a successful speaking and online coaching business. For more information, go to ChristopherKai.com. Our guest today is Logan Wolf. He's a CEO, board member, entrepreneur, speaker, and published author. Logan, welcome to our podcast.
Thank you, Christopher. It's a pleasure to be here.
So I love the name of one of your books. It's called Iconic by Design, The Value of Good Taste in Business. So talk to us about why you chose to write this book.
Thank you. That's an excellent question. I think all of us know an iconic design when we see it. It could be anything from a Porsche 911, you know, Carrera sports car, original iPhone or Rolex, you know, a Jedi lightsaber, any of that stuff. We also know terrible product and service designs. It's things like plugging in your USB cable, or let's say boarding an international flight at the airport, or filing your taxes, right? So all of those, and I definitely take a broader view on design and entrepreneurship in this book, all of those are example of either bad or good designs, right? And that's one of the principles that I apply in all of my companies as well, including Wembley Partners, which I'm leading right now. So certainly I wanted to advise entrepreneurs and just share some insights and some stories of how, first of all, some of the iconic products that all of us know become, how did they actually became iconic in the first place, and how to apply these principles to their own companies. And this is certainly a book for entrepreneurs to stand out in a crowd of you know, this oversaturated market. Everybody has a service or a product, and definitely customers, they vote with their wallets, and you have to stand out. You have to be iconic.
Yeah. Let's talk about first a backstory, because I'm always curious about how people get the sense of good taste or even understanding this design. So were you a young kid where you understood this, or were you an older guy? Like, tell us about a little bit of a backstory about how you felt you were able to understand this concept of design and taste.
So that's a great question again. I'm certainly not a designer by any means, you know, in terms of education, but I guess I kind of cultivated the taste and whatnot, but it started with services, right? I'm a consultant by trade initially. So that's business, cybersecurity consulting, that sort of thing. And I just started noticing that, a lot of other, let's say the competitors and, the players in the market, they just did not design. They did not put enough effort or, thought into their services and how they offer them, right? And then that just kind of trickled into the products as well. So certainly when I say design, right, I'm not necessarily saying it's a visual representation. It could be a service design as well.
Yeah.
So ultimately, it has to be something that's customer-centric. So I started with that, just with my desire to,
make
my services.
What it is, like, for instance, I was 6 years old and I bought a Matchbox car, which was a Ferrari. And I remember I can literally push the car down and it had like suspension. And I remember how like really pretty the color was. So for me, it caught my attention. And as you said, in this world of super saturation, so many people don't know how to do that. So in your book, let's just dive into an actual story in your book, right? Like, what is a company that you chose to share in your book, and what can we learn from that potential story?
Well, I talk about a number of companies, but notably about Apple or Porsche and LVMH. So I'm a big car guy. Everybody knows I'm a car enthusiast. I build cars, I race cars, I collect them occasionally as well. And certainly Porsche's story was a big influence on me, as they built these iconic products in 911 Carrera sports car, but they haven't been selling. And they've actually, and I'm trying to sort of, pack a whole chapter here in a few minutes, but effectively they've released a car that admittedly saved the company, which was a Boxster, essentially their mid-engine sports car. And everybody loved it and really saved the company in terms of the image and the sales. Right. But one of the things that people appreciated was the engine that it shared with the iconic 911. And at one point, about 4 years ago, I'm going to say, Porsche actually changed it to a much more efficient four-cylinder engine. And it just started selling absolutely terribly, because that showed that, they didn't sort of understand what drove people who buy that car. And one of the things was all Porsche fans are big gearheads, so they just wanted to buy a specific type of engine, specific package. But what they did then, and it's a pretty non-typical reversal for a car company, they actually completely reversed course last year, and then they pretty much put the old, the previous engine in there, albeit improved, and then again the sales soared. So that shows an understanding of the customer base, right? But at the same time, companies like Apple, for example, right? Apple pioneered the smartphone, and they've created iconic designs, even though there was nothing like quite like that in the market. So how did they arrive to that conclusion? How did they figure out? And you know, one of the big things, obviously, a driver behind that was Steve Jobs' desire to make products that are perfect, that are, you know, usable, and that are world changing. So I talked about that quite a bit and what kind of thinking that took in the 80s.
That's awesome. When you said about the whole four cylinder, I was really shocked. I'm like, really? They built, because again, when I think of Porsche, I think fast, I think elegant, I think high end, and whole four cylinder. Of course, that's more of the people that maybe are not enthusiasts with cars, but it shocked me, and it makes sense why they went back. Now, I like the title of that book, and it looks like you have a series of books. And so I'm curious, I know this hasn't come out yet, but I just love the title. It's called The 1.28% Startup. What is that about?
So this number reflects the number of unicorn startups. So it's essentially companies that make it to the status of a unicorn, right? I sort of based this on my own entrepreneurship experience. I had two successful exits in the past with companies, mostly high tech, artificial intelligence and transportation. And, you know, with Wembley Partners, with my current cybersecurity products and services company, we've been tremendously successful. And I really built this company based on my previous experiences. And it definitely took some gotcha moments that I wanted to share with fellow entrepreneurs, you know, of how the company is, it actually grows. Like one of the gotcha moments, for example, is, and it's really one-on-one. It seems very obvious, but essentially you need to have not only the great product and the great, you know, team and product market fit, all that kind of stuff. You need to be profitable as a company first and foremost, right? Which is something that when I was running my very first business, you know, a lot of people, they sort of have this idea, especially if they're straight out of school, that they're going to develop a fantastic product, might as well be an iconic product, as a matter of fact, and then build it and they will come. And unfortunately, again, in the saturated market, it just doesn't work this way. So you need to have a go-to-market strategy. You need to have everything laid up, you know, and ducks in a row. And it's a very practical book. It's going to be essentially a step-by-step guide on how to become a unicorn.
Awesome. So in case someone else wants to really have the drive that you have, were there some themes across your life that it was consistent? So let's say in my case, consistency is so important. Whatever I'm writing a book, giving a speech, consistency is super important for me. Was there one principle that for you was always your go-to thing that always kept you through and moved you through various challenges?
That's, again, an excellent question. Really loving this. So first of all, what always drove me is I'm going to say two things. That's freedom and making a difference. I know this sounds super cheesy, but all of us want to live life the way we want. And we want to be remembered before we fade into obscurity. And I think that's what drives a lot of entrepreneurs in our time. But one of the key things I think is a driver for me personally is perhaps somewhat depressingly is dissatisfaction with the current state of things and with the status quo. So I've noticed that the biggest progresses and the biggest changes I've made in my life, positive changes, were when I became so dissatisfied with the current situation that it really forced me to take action.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you mentioned that because that's actually what forced me to take action. 20 years ago, I worked at American Express in New York, and I literally told myself in my mid-20s, I said, you know what, I'm going to shoot myself if I'm 30 years old, still working here. Now, I obviously didn't want to shoot myself. I'm saying, unfortunately, we were led by either pleasure or avoidance of pain. And it sounds like you have that similar mindset of avoiding pain, where when you get to a certain point with money and pleasure, it's not, at least for myself, I mean, yeah, it's cool, but I don't want to live a painful, soulless life. And that's what I saw in that context. So when you said that, it reminded me of my life and in various aspects of that, because at the end of the day, we need to understand our motivations. And it sounds like you have, and I really appreciate you sharing that with the listeners that we have and your readers, because really it's about understanding what motivates us, whether it's that car, that house, that girl, that guy, or the avoidance of like that perfect line in Wolf of Wall Street where Leonardo DiCaprio's character talks about how, you know, I'm pulling up in a Porsche with my beautiful wife. Who are you going to be pulling up with? And he literally paints this very negative picture of a beat up Pinto with groceries packed in the back of a Pinto. But what I'm saying for the listeners, hopefully you learn from Logan, because he's the guy in that Porsche and you're the guy or gal maybe in the other car, but we all have a choice. That's the beauty of life. So Logan, thank you so much for being on our podcast. How can our guests connect and stay in touch with you?
Just LinkedIn, honestly. You guys, you know, anybody who wants to connect with me can shoot me a message, shoot me a connection invite. I'm, you know, I'm all over the place. I speak at conferences. You know, I do podcasts. I'm very active on LinkedIn, so definitely that's the best avenue to connect with me. And please do. I reply to everybody, and I'm a very active communicator.
Great, Logan. Thank you so much. Have a great day.
My pleasure, Jonathan. Thank you, Christopher.
Thank you for listening to the Gifters Podcast. If you want to learn how to turn your story into a successful speaking and online coaching business, go to christopherkai.com to learn more.